This episode of the Dead TV Podcast is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Go on down to Wicked Chronic on Route 9 in Natick, Massachusetts to check out their wide selection of unique items boutique-style retail store that focuses on selling counterculture products, combining Wiccan and cannabis cultures together in one of the most unique and interesting ways possible. Wicked Chronic is on 185 Worcester Street in Natick, Massachusetts, and they can be reached by Beverly at wickedchronic.com or wickedchronic.vendcommerce.com. Check them out. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. You are listening to the Dead TV Podcast, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Zeneca.
And today's episode of Constantine is episode 12. Mr. Zeneca has the title and synopsis for us for the second to last episode of the Constantine television series.
I know, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah, okay. We got two episodes left, one episode left of the actual TV show, and then a special episode.
All right. Angels and Ministers of Grace. The episode was aired on February 6, 2015. John asks Manny to help him investigate a mysterious attack at a hospital. A health issue prompts Zed to question her visions.
In this episode, we get some DC comic lore, which we will get to. And in fact, we get to it right in the very beginning during the slow opening thing, whatever the heck that's usually called, the beginning little sequence of TV shows before the song.
Yeah, before the opening credits come on, you know, we get a scene of, you know, a woman picking up her drugs, and because it's the day before her brother's funeral, and she's needing a fix to kind of get her mind off of things, and she definitely looks out of place in the situation. So
yeah, I was a little like, okay, weird yeah. Girl needs drugs from a shady dude. Possibly heroin?
That's what it seems like. And the drug dealer says, you know, a little up, a little down. So it's possibly not heroin, but like heroin mixed with something else. So it has an up effect as well. But, you know, and you find out later in the story that she was basically sober, you know, she was an addict and then became sober. And then now she kind of relapsed because, you know, hard times, stress, you know, people go to their go-to coping mechanisms. And for her, that was, I guess, heroin. So, and then as she's, you know, picking up and then goes around a corner to try to shoot up, lights flicker, and suddenly, you know, she's being attacked by something, someone, and both syringes get it injected straight into her chest.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is the heroin laced with the crystals of Eclipso? Is that how she gets it in her? Because she becomes like every other person in this episode that is affiliated with the Eclipso diamond particle stuff.
You know, I don't think so, because if that were true, then someone would have had to handle it to get into the syringes.
Yeah, correct. And if you even touch a Eclipso piece of
the black diamond shards,
yeah, which is the MacGuffin of the whole episode, is that the all these people are affiliated, are afflicted and start going kind of crazy, which I thought going into it this was going to be like a, oh, everyone's like, you know, everyone gets this like disease or this sickness and they become like 28 days later, until I suddenly started listening to, until I was watching the episode, and then I replayed what John said, and I replayed the doctor who goes to Iraq said, and that's when it started clicking in my brain. I'm like, wait a minute, I've heard this before, and went online immediately, and sure enough, I was confirmed that the affliction is connected to the longtime DC villain Eclipso, first created back in 1962.
And you know, when you first told me that, I was like, really?
Did you know who that was when I mentioned it to you?
I mean, I had heard about it in passing, really.
Okay.
I had not read anything about Eclipso. It was just kind of a mention about being the forerunner to the Spectre. And the way that this episode kind of played out with the shard of the Black Diamond, the Heart of Darkness, being right next to the Doctor's heart. And that's why he's kind of transformed, I guess, you know. But he seems like a very nice guy when he's acting in his doctor role. And it seemed that when anyone were coming in contact with that shard anyway, like they were just evil, just pure evil. It ran through them, and there was no good side about a person once that was integrated.
So what did you think of Eclipsed Part 1 and 2 before we get back to Constantine?
I actually really enjoyed it. It was fun to watch all of the Justice League characters get possessed one by one by the Heart of Darkness crystal.
Yes.
I didn't think Superman could actually get possessed like that, but he is prone to magic, so magic actually has a great effect on him, and apparently so does evil.
Yes. Superman's been possessed several times by like Maxwell Lord and nearly beat up Batman, only to have Wonder Woman have to snap Maxwell Lord's neck, and it was a big controversy at the time. Anyway, long story short, the best part of that episode is the little guy who's like the protector of the Eclipso diamond, Mo'Fear.
The one who always talks about himself in third person.
Yes, that guy was fantastic, or whatever. Mo'Fear has failed once again. And then, of course, the subplot line with Glorious Godfrey turning the public against the Justice League. Especially when he's just like, role models? I know supermodels with more modesty than Wonder Woman, and she smashes the
Oh,
TV.
yeah, she's pissed because she loves her costume.
What's wrong with what I'm wearing? And the Flash is like, I'm gonna let you handle this one, GL. And you know who voices the Flash on that show?
Who?
Michael Rosenbaum, best known as playing Lex Luthor on Smallville.
Oh, really?
Yes. In fact, there was an episode, one of the best episodes of the Justice League is called The Great Brain Robbery, where Lex Luthor switches minds with the Flash, and Lex Luthor on Justice League and Superman the Animated Series was voiced by Clancy Brown, who has a very distinguished voice. And he got to see Michael Rosenbaum play like an evil Flash, so he gets to use his like Lex Luthor voice from Smallville. And there's this great scene where Flash in Luthor's brain is in the bathroom talking to himself. And the villains come in to find out what the hell is he doing, and he leaves the bathroom. One of them's like, "Aren't you going to wash your hands?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "No, because I'm evil." Or he like when Luthor's in Flash's brain, he goes, "Well, not everything's not a total loss. I can learn the identity of the Flash." And he takes off the Flash's mask. I have no idea who this is. So back to Constantine and his problems with Eclipso, the darkness within.
Yeah, one of the differences in the way that they portrayed the Black Diamond in the Justice League show and then in this episode is that in Justice League, whenever you touch it, you are automatically just evil person. You want to destroy the Earth, you want to kill people, there's no way around it, you're plotting to do it. There is no nice about you.
Correct.
And in the episode of Constantine, the doctor, Zed's doctor, actually has a piece of that, you know, Black Diamond Heart of Darkness next to his heart. But he's kind of, you know, nice guy the whole episode until that big reveal.
Yeah, and they did keep the whole thing about the snakes and everything in there as well, because a snake bites John later on. But it doesn't really affect John because of the way he's being protected. Now, this is also kind of a not only do we get the whole cast of Constantine characters, we get Manny through most of the episode, where he's always a drop in with some cryptic message and then leaves, and John actually traps him within the body of the doctor.
Oh, I love that. That was hilarious. Actually, there's I have some notes on this.
Yeah, go ahead with the notes because I want to get to the yum,
okay.
the best yum moment of the entire show.
Okay, so when John is about to kind of pull this trick on Manny, like he has been prepared for this, so he pulls out a vial of the air from Hades, and when it's actually revealed that he has it, and he said it was given to me by a siren, and oh, what a weekend. I actually did some looking, and the sirens were actually friends of Persephone. So it was more than likely in the lines of John's life, where Persephone, which goes down to the underworld with Hades, gets this vial of air, brings it to her friends, the sirens, when it's springtime up top, and somehow John managed to convince the sirens, or they gave it to him, to give this vial just for his future use. So I thought that was a bit interesting. There's a lot of little things that were just kind of tossed out there in dialogue, but I'll kind of go through them sporadically throughout the episode today. The symbol that John cuts into the doctor in order to trap Manny into his doctor suit is, I couldn't actually find a pure symbol in any of my books of this drawing. It's like a trident with a circle at the bottom and arrows pointed in. But the elements of it I could track down. So the trident part of it, the way it's drawn, it's actually a terra ponderosa, which is Latin for heavy soil. And so that makes sense because he is grounding Manny into this body. And then the circle with the arrows pointed inwards is also a symbol for high pressure or a meeting place. So it is grounding this energy into the doctor and then keeping it there in the one particular spot. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. Even though I couldn't find an occult symbol, you know, exactly for this, the pieces of that are there. And the spell that he actually says... When he tries to see the dark matter of the victim, the first victim, the druggie that we mentioned.
Yes, yeah.
That's actually Gaelic, but I couldn't figure out what was the language that he actually did when he did the spell on Manny. I tried, I looked everywhere, and I couldn't actually figure it out.
He probably just made up for the show.
Maybe, but you know, considering all the effort that they put into it. Otherwise, it might be legit, and I just am not looking at the right books. Yeah, I don't know.
There's not a lot of like lore out there that I've noticed about how to trap, kill, and snare, ground, chain up an angel.
Not an angel, no.
Angels are not known. Okay, angels are warriors of God and involved in the Bible with a lot of like smiting, destroying, and stuff like that. However, in television, in fiction, like Supernatural, like Constantine. They are portrayed as like physical beings that go a little bit above and beyond being just the bad, you know, the enforcers of God's will, to being like straight up bad guys and tiptoeing the line between like, well, what's the difference between an angel and a demon if the angel's willing to do this? Mm-hmm. But like in actual like real life lore that we live in, the reality, you're gonna find more spells and things to deal with like all sorts of manners of like demonic forces than you ever will trying to get rid of an angel.
And that kind of makes sense in theology because heavenly forces are kind of discorporate. You know, they don't have a form, they don't have a body, they may show up to someone, but it's not like they have a physical mortal form.
Correct.
And when they get thrown out of heaven, that's kind of when they lose their you know, heavenly state, and therefore they have now a spiritual, tangible form in some way. Theologically, it kind of makes sense with that, but yeah, I could not find any sort of spells or occult listings for how to bind an angel somewhere.
Yeah, in the on the TV
spirits, yes, angels no.
In the TV series Supernatural, Castiel describes angels as being the size of a Chrysler building.
Oh,
in their true form, that's how big they are. Because if God is supposed to be like this all encompassing being, greater than the universe itself, then the angels should be not the size of a 6-foot human. with, you know, 5'8" to 6 feet tall is the average height of a human being. So they should be the size of buildings. You know what I mean? They should be like the size of Transformers or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Legion with Paul Bettany?
I did not, no.
It was basically God who was so tired of us that he sends his angels down to destroy us. And the first angel to oppose him against this is Michael. And Michael is cast out of heaven, and he escapes out of heaven and destroys his wings, and which ends up destroying his halo, which actually the halo isn't around his head, it's around his neck. It's a collar.
Okay.
Yeah. So he has to team up with a bunch of people in a diner to stop like this onslaught of angels who are trying to kill this baby. And this baby is never explained who the baby really is in the movie. It's one of the parts of the movie a lot of people hate. But the special effects are kind of cool. But the angels definitely come across as like demonic entities possessing people.
You know, it really depends on your perspective and your point of view, whether you really feel that angels are truly benevolent or they are a force in which act upon their previously designated will that might be theirs or might be someone else's, but they're not really for your own good. And it just really depends on your perspective. And in all of the lore, it pretty much says the free will is one of those things that angels do not really have, but yet they kind of do things on their own, and when they do things on their own, then they get punished for it. So I guess they do have free will. I don't know, but when Constantine binds Manny into this form, he's now then cut off from all of his angelic databases, pretty much. All the heavenly hosts he cannot communicate with, and he is experiencing all these new feelings, new smells, like he finally smells a dead body for the first time. Really makes him vomit all over the place. But
yeah, he can't take it. It's really funny. His human reactions are absolutely hilarious, especially to the smoking hot nurse who comes on to him.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the yum moment of the night. Yeah, doctor and nurse getting it on in the supply cabinet.
Yeah, and they really get it on because she unzips them and takes them right down the gullet.
Yeah.
I was shocked that they did it that extensively to be like, oh, yeah, she is definitely giving him a blowjob.
Yeah, the look on his face is just astounding and... Then he explains afterwards how he just, you know, extinguished his desire, you know, with this woman. And Constantine says, what, you gave two people pleasure? You know, that's something to be happy about, not something to be punished over. But, you know, I didn't write the rules, you know.
John would have definitely enjoyed that, but Manny's all like, ah, chastity!
Yeah, guilt.
Basically.
Yeah, so that was definitely the yum moment of the night.
John putting the spell on Manny, by the way, is very much like John would in the comic book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't recall him actually doing it to an angel in the comic book specifically, but he did etch spells into a demon's soul in order to obscure her from the powers that be in the underworld, so that she could actually live a free existence. So that same type of behavior he did on a demon. So it makes sense for him to do it to an angel.
Now, my question is, and this goes for you're a podcast host and you are a PR woman, but you also hold high court in Pennsylvania as Mistress Zeneca. Does the indication of sucking one's fingers going to indicate oral sex as well soon?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because before she begins to go down on Manny, she is, like, sucking on his fingers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. finger sucking is usually the, imagine the feeling of this somewhere else.
Exactly. Okay, I mean to make sure I use that for, like, my next date, that my date, I suck my fingers. Okay. Because I had a date one time that didn't quite get that actually meant. I was like, oh, so you're going, and she's like, why? I was like, because you sucked my fingers. She's like, is that what that means? I thought I was just being really, like, you know, kind of first-basious. I was like, no, okay, let me explain this to you.
It's pretty sad when you have to explain softcore porn.
It's pretty sad when you have to educate the vanilla.
Yeah, true. True.
So while that's all happening, and Manny's getting his mojo going,
the dark matter has pretty much claimed another victim, which is why Manny actually throws up. You know, the drunken Duncan, the orderly slash janitor.
That's too funny the way you said that.
Orderly slash janitor.
The drunken Duncan.
Yeah, the drunken Duncan, who basically had a liver transplant, a portion of a liver transplanted from his brother, and yet he continued drinking. And one of the things that we're seeing throughout the theme of why the victims are chosen as they're chosen is because they were given a second chance and they are wasting it. So the sober druggie turns back to the drugs, and that's was her second chance, and she's wasting it. The janitor, Duncan, is still drinking, and he's wasting and pickling his new liver. And Zed, who is beginning to get a biopsy of this tumor, which is revealed in this episode that she has in her brain.
Yeah, and it's the whole reason
and the doctor gets pissed that she's not going to take the surgery.
And it's the whole reason why she has her visions, too, which is like, really eats away at John completely, because he's been pushing her, and then he is like wrecked with guilt through the rest of the episode because of it. Like, this isn't like a very much past, this is like straight up to the very end of the last scene of the episode that he is destroyed over the way he has pushed her so much.
And you know, when Manny is trying to comfort Zed, you know, when he's trapped in the body and visits, you know, he's trapped in the Dr. Bob's body. And Manny never really answers any of Zed's questions. He kind of slips around the question, like, well, I think you know the answers. And like a psychologist would. So he's trying to bring comfort to Zed, and he's saying, well, you already know the answers. Well, I'm here for you. And, you know, he says that John doesn't really know how to express his feelings. And they both kind of agreed and had a bit of a chuckle over it. But yeah, he, throughout the comics and throughout the show, John Constantine has friends throughout his life that are just worse off for having met him.
Correct, yeah.
You know, Gary Lester, he actually had to sacrifice to the demon in order to get rid of the demon. You know, each one of his friends are pissed off at him and, you know, swear that they don't want to see him again, or even shooting him, you know. So when it's Zed, you know, a person that he's kind of grown close to, not in a sexual way or anything like that, but as in a collaborative way, you know, she serves a great purpose and he really kind of likes having her around. Her having this condition and his racked with guilt of that him pushing her might have actually sped up the progression of the tumor and that could lead to her death. It looks heartbreaking. It absolutely looks heartbreaking. And Constantine actually smokes a lot in this episode, and I think that's another way that his emotions are coming out.
Yeah, I'm just I was kind of surprised and happy that they did that, because there are times in the comic book John is not a complete hollow shell, and he does show emotion for things. And I don't just mean like the times he's trying to get into some woman's pants either, which, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, every episode of Constantine that I've rewatched now doing this podcast, there isn't a lot of John being... What is that?
Those are my cats.
Okay. There is not a lot of time of John being like a douchebag, womenizing, piggish ladies man. Or Tomcat, sorry, not ladies man, Tomcat. You know what I mean? However, have you watched the episode of Arrow he's in yet?
I have not. I've been waiting to watch it before we review it.
Wait until you do, because he is all up into Oliver Queen's sister and wanting to bang her.
He is quite a charming gent, I have to say.
Much to all. By the way, this is Oliver Queen's younger sister, over the age of 18, and also, by the way, the daughter of Ra's al Ghul. Well, Ra's al Ghul number two or three, by the way. It's John Barryman from Torchwood's daughter, let's just say that. just trying to get an explanation out there. We'll go into more of the backstory of what was going on in Arrow leading up to the episode that we're going to talk about in 2 weeks. But yes, it's like the only time out of all the episodes that he is in that I see him ever trying to be like, oh my, let me throw my British accent out there to get into your panties.
And let the panties drop.
Basically, yes. And even Ian Thea Queen, a.k.a. Red Arrow, is very like, whoo, I'm getting a little hot. And Oliver just being like, you know I could kill you, right?
I do like the way that they portray him. He's very... I don't know what the word is. He's coy towards women more than he is, you know, womanizing. There's only been one time that, like, he was actually in bed with a woman, sexual, and he had a run out the window.
Correct.
But other than that, he has been just kind of taking care of business, has his mind on that, and everything else is just kind of playing around, being cheeky.
Yeah, other than like the nun, you know, his old flame who became a nun, who betrayed her vow to God for a brief second to kiss him, that's it. But you know, again, maybe the writers of the show, who were the same writers on Arrow, the same writers on The Flash, and Supergirl, and DC Legends of Tomorrow, and Black Lightning. By the way, John makes this John. If John had continued, there would have been six freaking shows on the DC interconnected TV continuity universe.
Wow.
Yeah, but don't forget, John's coming back this January with an animated series, so we'll see what happens. And there's already been confirmation of both Oliver and Flash voice actors, the actors who play them, doing voiceovers for their animated counterparts. So
excellent.
Yes, woohoo! We may revisit Constantine for the animated series, because we don't know how long that's going to go for, so it might be a special one-off episode where we watch all the episodes and we just kind of do a, you know, a thing for it, so in between the seasons of Friday the 13th.
Cool.
I do love the line that says, when Zed is... Oh, shoot. I'm jumping ahead of my notes just a little bit, and I don't mean to...
That's okay. We're going to jump back and forth here.
Yeah. So they talk about the snakes are used to spread the Eclipso. Eclipso comes from the Middle East, which is everything, by the way, from the DC lore. Without getting into a lot of the backstory of Eclipso, because his continuity has changed a few times due to the constant rewriting of the DC universe. Unlike John, who's always been kind of the same... Eclipso has evolved a few different times. That stuff is direct. That was when I really started clicking in my brain. This is Eclipso. Holy shit, this is fucking Eclipso. This is so awesome. And I was just like scrambling around. And I was typing to Mr. Zeneca. Oh my god! My geek nerdgasm I was having in my freaking brain, in my pants, was unbelievable. It was everywhere. It took forever to clean up. But the creature, the guy that they fight, kind of reminds me of Jason Voorhees without his mask on.
Yeah, because they have him all, you know, disfigured and bulging in places, you know. It would have probably looked a little bit better had they colored, you know, three-quarters of his face a different color just to have that eclipse a bit on him. But, yeah, it looked a little bit more Jason Voorhees / Hunchback of Notre Dame /, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was all right, but I didn't really dig it so much.
When Zed is finally cured, sort of, and they're at church, she can see Manny, and it's like, again, another one of these like touching moments in the episode.
And again, he doesn't answer her question.
No, magic has its costs. There was another part of that line I didn't write it down for some reason. All I wrote down was, magic has its cost. What else did she say?
Let me see if I have it in my notes.
I guess Manny's gonna heal Zed, so...
Magic has its cost... No, that's the quote that I wrote down.
Oh, okay. Manny is gonna heal Zed, because Zed would have lasted through season two, of course, if we had gotten there. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how it ends. It ends at the church, so there's, you know, everything ties up in a neat little bow. John reassembles the
Black Diamond.
The Black Diamond of Eclipso. My only disappointment is we didn't get to see anybody doing the face makeup that Eclipso is known for. So his face is supposed to be like a moon, eclipsing of the sun. So it's like, that's kind of like what the makeup of Eclipso is supposed to be. Any of the heroes
half.
That's pretty much the Eclipso kind of costume. It's like purple and stuff. In the comic books, in current continuity, the last person to become Eclipso was the Justice League under the control of Maxwell Lord. So Eclipso used Maxwell Lord's psychic mind control powers on the Justice League. Every single member, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Cyborg, and Aquaman, I believe, was in this iteration. And the only people that were able to stop them was Amanda Waller's Suicide Squad with the characters that you know from the movie. So I don't have to go through all the characters. It's basically all the characters from the movie, because we can't make a comic book that's not, like, copying everything that's happening in the movie, because we got to sell comic books. If they go and buy the comic book and Harley Quinn's not in it, then they're never going to sell it. So don't get me started on that. Like, fucking Hawkeye's costume looks exactly like the Jeremy Renner. It doesn't look the way Hawkeye's supposed to look. Yeah, the Suicide Squad was the last line of defense against a Eclipso-possessed Justice League, and it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So you can pick it up in Justice League versus Suicide Squad in the trade paperback.
Well, I found some pictures of Jasper Winter's office where he has his notes about the Black Diamond. And out of the pages on the images, you know, the type is like handwriting is very tiny scroll, but what I did read was quotes, "The key is in the hunger of secrets. Spirit of the wrath of God, responsible for the great flood. At first, be only able to come out during the eclipse, but it became so much more. The absence of light gives him power." So those are the quotes directly from Jasper's notes that they rifle through in the vault. other miscellaneous occult mythology information here is in the beginning of the episode, Zed kind of cloisters herself into this meditation room. Like one of these rooms inside the mill is kind of always a springtime meditation area. And so she ties a string around her finger and leaves the spool of thread with Chaz. And so Chaz can find her and she can find her way back. When John actually follows the thread to find her out, they talk a little bit about Theseus. And Theseus used a thread to actually navigate the labyrinth and find his way out. What they said in the show is that it was... how do I pronounce this word? Ariadne? Her thread. And technically, yes, it was her thread that he actually used to find his way out. But the advice was actually given to him from Daedalus, the creator of the labyrinth. So the creator gave him this advice as to use the string. Princess Ariadne actually gave him the jeweled thread. She is the daughter of the king, the Cretan king Minos. Also the daughter of the Pasiphae, and she gave the thread and a sword to Theus in order to go and fight the Minotaur. You know, it's mentioned her story in the show where Theseus actually leaves her and abandons her somewhere. John mentions that, well, you know, she begged a god after that, you know, and that's true. God Dionysus actually wedded her. And she was loyal to him her whole life, and they had 12 children. 12 children. until she was killed by Perseus much later. So at the end of the episode, when, you know, she says that even Dionysus couldn't save her, as kind of a analogy for John not being able to save Zed at the end of the episode, like, because of the tumor, like, there's nothing he can do. You know, Perseus did kill her at the end of, you know, a very long and fruitful relationship with Dionysus. So that's just a little mythology there. And a drop in that was very easy to miss. At the very beginning of the episode, before he walks and walks down that red thread, he comes in and looks at Chaz, and Chaz asks, "Did you bring any cilantro home?" And John actually says, "No, I brought tannis root, adder's tongue, and catnip. No cilantro." Meaning that all he brought was, like, spiritual supplies.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So catnip is for psychic bonding, and adder's tongue is used for healing a spell. So basically, it seems that these are herbs to help Zed in her recovery.
Could you say could you say it's also used for psychic bondage?
I don't know. If I know he swings that way, but I'm not sure about Zed.
Is there such a thing as psychic bondage? Do you believe in that? You're a little bit more of the practitioner of the BDSM arts than I am.
I am also a practitioner of hypnosis, and I would say yes.
Holy shit. Mistress Zedek can psychic bond somebody. Jesus Christ.
Yes, woman. I can make someone come on command.
Oh,
I can make you feel things that you...
God.
Yeah. It takes a lot of practice. Like, you have to be dedicated to it, but...
I need to be experimented on, so I will come up to Pennsylvania, and you can experiment on me, because my sex life is pretty boring.
Okay, the last thing, tannis root. Now, this is specifically a callback to Rosemary's Baby, because tannis root does not exist. Tannis root was only made for that media. So tannis root is basically tied with devil worship and, you know, devil, you know, Satanist cultist, you know, type of thing. But tannis root is completely fake. So Constantine saying that he brought tannis root, adder's tongue, and catnip, tannis root does not exist. Totally a callback to Rosemary's Baby. So somewhere in that production crew, they kind of threw that in for a personal laugh. The spell... I mentioned it before, the spell, when John casts a Gaelic spell to over the first victim, the drug user, and then the room kind of shines with this hugely bright light, and then the body is black, you know, to indicate the dark matter. That spell, I might be butchering the actual pronunciation here, but Di Cruin Si Agas Akasha Siol Midusolas. It actually means, of the universe, Akasha, show me your light. Thought that was kind of cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after this, we only have one episode left of Constantine before our special Constantine episode, which we might, since we're not going to be meeting again for 2 weeks, I have an opportunity to hopefully remind this person. We might, I'm not going to say who it is. Mr. Zedeka knows who it is, but I'm not going to say it on the air, because just in case we don't get them.
Yes.
I'm going to use plural so you don't know if it's a male or female. A Constantine writer. Somebody who actually wrote the Constantine comic book series. Or Hellblazer. Or whatever version of John we've seen. This person is a writer for DC Comics currently. And they wrote Constantine at one point. They wrote it for 12 or 20 issues. I'm not exactly sure. I will be seeing them at the Boston Comic Con coming up, which is happening. So this episode will be online on Wednesday. So if you're listening to it on Wednesday, in 2 days at the World Trade Center Convention Center, which is where they do PAX East. This is the biggest convention hall in Boston, Massachusetts. The Boston Comic Con will be happening there. I will be there on Friday and Saturday. I don't have a booth, but I will be there passing out cards for Radio Horror, Dead TV Podcast, Supernatural Creatures and Lore, my audiobook, Dracula. I'll be wearing multiple hats, and I will have a bag full of comic books that I am getting signed by multiple artists like John Romita Jr. and Andy Kubert, and I will be meeting, hopefully, Felicia Day. Yes, and there'll also be some Arrow people there. Nobody from Constantine, but we will have Black Canary, the late Black Canary. we will have Diggle, and we will have Malcolm Merlin, aka Thea's father from Arrow. So multiple Arrow actors there in connection to Constantine. One of which did share screen time. The actress who played Black Canary was on screen with John Constantine in the episode we're going to watch coming up, as she needs John's help to re-ensoul her dead sister. Her sister was brought back to life through the Lazarus Pits, which, if you know anything about those, is what brings Ra's al Ghul back to life every 5 minutes. But the problem is that she had been dead for quite a while. And Ra's al Ghul is usually only dead for a few minutes when he gets resurrected. So she has been dead for a long time, so her soul is all sorts of screwed up, and Oliver can only think of one person to help them, which is John Constantine.
Of course.
Yes. And we will also be reviewing, of course, the Justice League Dark movie. We're not going to go through scene by scene what happens in the movie. We're just going to kind of talk about the movie. We'll go scene by scene over what happens with Arrow, a little abridged, only because John is only in half the episode, by the way. So,
we're going to focus on that.
Yeah, we're going to focus on that, and hopefully we'll have our surprise DC Comics John Constantine writer on the show with us, if I can remind them that we talked briefly about that at a previous convention. So hopefully it triggers their memory and goes, oh, yes. Okay, so email me again, like, right now, so I have it fresh in my memory. So we'll keep you apprised about that, but join us in 2 weeks for the next episode, the last episode of Constantine. And then after the special, we're going to be doing 2 weeks back-to-back of Swamp Thing, the animated series, with Michael Ravenshadow from the Dead TV, from the Trick or Treat podcast, rejoining us as a comic book expert regarding Swamp Thing. So Swamp Thing, and then we'll be doing Friday the 13th. We'll be doing two episodes of podcast of Friday the 13th with various guests, the first one being somebody who wrote the episode guide. So a little brief update on everything that's happening on the Dead TV podcast. You can find out all the information about the previous episodes on RadioHorror.com and the Dead TV podcast Facebook page and our individual Twitters, Mr. Zeneca.
At Elegantly Kinky.
At Chris D. SAV. By the way, do you have any event coming up you want to plug within the next, let's just say, between now and the next time we rejoin, the next couple weeks?
Not within the next couple weeks.
Okay.
But within a month, I will be doing Dragon Con. So
God. You have to talk about Dragon Con when you come back. And hopefully, if you're at Dragon Con, you can talk up people about the Dead TV podcast. Maybe direct them to the Facebook page.
I will indeed, and hopefully I'll make some connections there as well for our show.
Find out if anyone's worked on anything that we are going to be covering coming up. You know, you have the list of what we're covering. I'm only going to go into it up to Friday the 13th, because we'll be on Friday the 13th until the end
of
the year.
For a long time.
Yeah, well, at least until if we're doing two episodes a week, we should be on Friday the 13th through the end of the year, and then we'll be taking a break from Friday the 13th to do another cartoon series before we go back to Friday the 13th. So,
yeah.
As long as we can both get access to that cartoon series, that's the other thing. But anyway, I'm going way, way, way too far ahead. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I have been your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
Thank you once again to our sponsor, Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Thank you to Jess O'Lantern, who just put out a brand new album and going on tour soon, so you can check her out on her website for our theme and ending song. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, everybody.